Chapter 73. Written on rather stiff pale green paper. If you will have those typed dash writer and keep the originals, and send me the copies one per mail, not two. I'll see if I can use them. But tell Howells and other inquirers that my hopes of writing anything are very slender. I seem to be disabled for life. Drop McClure a line, and tell him the same. I can't dare to make an engagement now for even a single letter. I am glad Howells is on a magazine, but sorry he gave up the study. I shall have to go on a magazine myself if this 50. A. 50. Continues to hold my nose down to the grindstone much longer. I'm going to hold my breath now, for 30 days then the annual statement will arrive, and I shall know how we feel. Merry Christmas to you from us all. Sincerely, S50. C.P.S. just finished the above, and finished raging at the eternal German tax gatherer, and so all the jubilant things which I was going to say about the past year's business got knocked out of me. After writing this present letter I was feeling blue about Huck Finn, but I sat down, and over all the reports from now back to last April, and compared them with the splendid October-November business, and went to bed feeling refreshed and fine, for certainly it has been a handsome year. Now rush me along the annual report and let's see how we feel. S50. C. XXXII, Letters, 1892, chiefly to Mr. Hall and Mrs. Crane. In Berlin, Menton, Bad Nauheim, Florence, Mark Twain was the notable literary figure in Berlin that winter, the center of every great gathering. He was entertained by the Kaiser, and shown many special attentions by Germans of every rank. His books were as well known in Berlin as in New York, and at court assemblies and embassies he was always a chief center of interest. He was too popular for his own good. The gaiety of the capital told on him. Finally, one night, after delivering a lecture in a hot room, he contracted a severe cold, driving to a ball at General von Versen's, and a few days later was confined to his bed with pneumonia. It was not a severe attack, but it was long continued. He could write some letters, and even work a little, but he was not allowed to leave his bed for many weeks, a condition which he did not find a hardship, for no man ever enjoyed the loose luxury of undress, and the comfort of pillows more than Mark Twain. In a memorandum of that time he wrote, "I am having a booming time all to myself." Meantime, Hall, in America, was sending favorable reports of the publishing business, and this naturally helped to keep up his spirits. He wrote frequently to Hall, of course, but the letters for the most part are purely of a business nature, and of little interest to the general reader. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. Hotel Royal, Berlin, February 12. Dear Mr. Hall, Daly wants to get the stage rights of the American Claimant. The foundation from which I wrote the story is a play of the same name which has been in A.P. Burbank's hands 5 or 6 years. That play cost me some money helping Burbank stage it, but has never brought me any. I have written Burbank Lotto's Club, and asked him to give me back his rights in the old play, so that I can treat with Daly, and utilize this chance to even myself up. Burbank is a lovely fellow, and if he objects I can't urge him. But you run in at the Lotto's and see him, and if he relinquishes his claim, then I would like you to conduct the business with Daly, or have Whitford or some other lawyer do it under your supervision if you prefer. This morning I seem to have rheumatism in my right foot. I am ordered south by the doctor, and shall expect to be well enough to start by the end of this month. No signature. It is curious, after Clemens and Howells had tried so hard and so long to place their Eller's play, that now, when the story appeared in book form, August and Daly should have thought it worth dramatizing. Daly and Clemens were old friends, and it would seem that Daly could hardly have escaped seeing the play when it was going the rounds. But perhaps there is nothing more mysterious in the world than the ways and wants of theatrical managers. The matter came to nothing, of course, but the fact that Daly should have thought a story built from an old discarded play had a play in it seems interesting. Clemens and his wife were advised to leave the cold of Berlin as soon as he was able to travel. This was not until the 1st of March, when, taking their old courier, Joseph Very, they left the children in good hands and journeyed to the south of France. To Susie Clemens, in Berlin. Menton, MCH 2292. Susie dear, I have been delighted to note your easy facility with your pen, and proud to note also your literary superiorities of one kind and another, clearness of statement, directness, felicity of expression, photographic ability in setting forth an incident, style good style, no barnacles on it in the way of unnecessary, retarding words. The shipman scrapes off the barnacles when he wants his racer to go her best gait and straight to the buoy. You should write a letter every day, long or short, and so ought I, but I don't. Mama says, tell Clara yes, she will have to write a note if the fan comes back mended. We couldn't go too nice today, had to give it up, on various accounts, and this was the last chance. I am sorry for Mama, I wish she could have gone. She got a heavy fall yesterday evening, and was pretty stiff and lame this morning, but is working it off trunk packing. Joseph has gone too nice to educate himself in codicing and to get the pictures mounted which Mama thinks she took here, but I noticed she didn't take the plug out, as a rule. When she did, she took 9 pictures on top of each other composites. With lots of love, Papa. In the course of their Italian wanderings they reached Florence, where they were so comfortable and well that they decided to engage a villa for the next winter. Through Prof. Willard Fisk, they discovered the Villa Viviani, near Settignano, an old palace beautifully located on the hilltops east of Florence, commanding a wonderful view of the ancient city. Clemens felt that he could work there, and time proved that he was right. For the summer, however, they returned to Germany and located at Bad Nauheim. Clemens presently decided to make a trip to America to give some personal attention to business matters. For one thing, his publishing house, in spite of prosperity, seemed constantly to be requiring more capital, and then a Chicago company had been persuaded by Page to undertake the manufacture of the typesetter. It was the beginning of a series of feverish trips which he would make back and forth across the ocean during the next 2 years. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. Bad Nauheim, June 11, 1992. Saturday. Dear Mr. Hall, if this arrives before I do, let it inform you that I am leaving Bremen for New York next Tuesday in the Avell. If you can meet me when the ship arrives, you can help me to get away from the reporters. And maybe you can take me to your own or some other lodgings, where they can't find me. But if the hour is too early, or too late for you, I shall obscure myself somewhere till I can come to the office. Yours sincerely, S50. See, nothing of importance happened in America. The New Page Company had a factory started in Chicago, and expected to manufacture 50 machines as a beginning. They claimed to have capital, or to be able to command it, and as the main control had passed from Clemens' hands, he could do no more than look over the ground and hope for the best. As for the business, about all that he could do was to sign certain notes necessary to provide such additional capital as was needed, and agree with Hall that hereafter they would concentrate their efforts and resist further temptation in the way of new enterprise. Then he returned to Bad Nauheim and settled down to literature. This was the middle of July, and he must have worked pretty steadily, for he presently had a variety of MSS ready to offer. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. August 10, 1992. Dear Mr. Halt, I have dropped that novel I wrote you about, because I saw a more effective way of using the main episode, to wit, by telling it through the lips of Huck Finn. So I have started Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer, still 15 years old, and their friend the freed slave Jim around the world in a stray balloon, with Huck as narrator, and somewhere after the end of that great voyage he will work in the said episode, and then nobody will suspect that a whole book has been written, and the globe circumnavigated, merely to get that episode in an effective, and at the same time apparently unintentional, way. I have written 12,000 words of this narrative, and find that the humor flows as easily as the adventures and surprises, so I shall go along and make a book of from 50,000 to 100,000 words. It is a story for boys, of course, and I think will interest any boy between 8 years and 80. When I was in New York the other day, Mrs. Dodge, editor of St. Nicholas, wrote and offered me $5,000 for Serial Right, a story for boys 50,000 words long. I wrote back and declined, for I had other matter in my mind then. I conceive that the right way to write a story for boys is to write so that it will not only interest boys, but will also strongly interest any man who has ever been a boy. That immensely enlarges the audience. Now this story doesn't need to be restricted to a child's magazine. It is proper enough for any magazine, I should think, or for a syndicate. I don't swear it, but I think so. Proposed title of the story, New Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. No signature. The novel mentioned in the foregoing was The Extraordinary Twins, a story from which Pudd'nhead Wilson would be evolved later. It was a wildly extravagant farce, just the sort of thing that now and then Mark Twain plunged into with an enthusiasm that had to work itself out and die a natural death, or mellow into something worthwhile. Tom Sawyer Abroad, as the new Huck story was finally called, was completed and disposed of to St. Nicholas for serial publication. The Twitchells were in Europe that summer, and came to Bad Nauheim. The next letter records a pleasant incident. The Prince of Wales of that day later became King Edward VIII. To Mr. and Mrs. Orion Clemens, in Keokuk, Iowa. Private. Bad Nauheim, August 23, 1992. Dear Ryan and Molly, rivate because no newspaper man or other gossip must get hold of it. Livy is getting along pretty well, and the doctor thinks another summer here will cure her. The Twitchells have been here 4 days and we have had good times with them. Joe and I ran over to Hamburg, the great pleasure resort, Saturday, to dine with some friends, and in the morning I went walking in the promenade, and met the British ambassador to the court of Berlin, and he introduced me to the Prince of Wales, and I found him a most unusually comfortable and unembarrassing Englishman, to talk with, quick to see the obscurest point, and equipped with a laugh which is spontaneous and catching. I'm invited by a near friend of his to meet him at dinner day after tomorrow, and there could be a good time, but the brass band will smash the talk and spoil everything. We are expecting to move to Florence 10 or 12 days hence, but if this hot weather continues we shall wait for cooler. I take Clara to Berlin for the winter music, mainly, with German and French added. Thus far, John is our only glib French scholar. We all send love to you all, and to Pamela and Sam's family, and Annie. Sam, Clemens and family left Bad Nauheim for Italy by way of Switzerland. In September Mrs. Clemens' sister, Mrs. Crane, who had been with them in Europe during the first year, had now returned to America. Mrs. Clemens had improved at the baths, though she had by no means recovered her health. We get a general report of conditions from the letter which Clemens wrote Mrs. Crane from Lucerne, Switzerland, where the party rested for several days. The Phelps mentioned in this letter was William Walter Phelps, United States Minister to Germany. The Phelps and Clemens families had been much associated in Berlin. A son was Frank Mason, Consul General at Frankfurt, and in later years at Paris. Harley and Ida were Charles and Mrs. Langdon, of Elmira. To Mrs. Crane, in Elmira, N.Y. Lucerne, September 1892. Dear Aunt Sue, imagine how I felt to find that you had actually gone off without filling my traveling inkstand which you gave me. I found it out yesterday. Livy advised me to write you about it. I have been driving this pen hard. I wrote 280 pages on a yarn called Tom Sawyer Abroad, then took up the winds again, destroyed the last half of the manuscript, and rewrote it in another form, and am going to continue it, and finish it in Florence. Tom Sawyer seems rather pale to the family after the extravagances of the twins, but they came to like it. After they got used to it, we remained in Nauheim a little too long. If we had left there 4 or 5 days earlier, we should have made Florence in 3 days. But by the time we got started, Livy had got smitten with what we feared might be erysipelas, greatly swollen neck and face, and unceasing headaches. We lay idle in Frankfurt 4 days, doctoring. We started Thursday and made Bale. Hard trip, because it was one of those trains that gets tired every 7 minutes, and stops to rest 3/4 of an hour. It took us 3 1/2 hours to get here, instead of the regulation 2:20. We reached here Friday evening, and will leave tomorrow, Tuesday, morning. The rest has made the headaches better. We shall pull through to Milan tomorrow if possible. Next day we shall start at 10 a.m., and try to make Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.